DIY.
I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Earlier this year, Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court Judge Bernard McGinley ruled against the state's controversial voter ID statute, saying it did not further the goal of free and fair elections. Governor Corbett, who signed the bill into law in 2012, said the state would not appeal the court's decision. Today on Radio Times, we continue our Thursday Ballot Talk series focusing on all things election-related. And in this hour, we examine ways to improve the election process in Pennsylvania, the hurdles for third-party candidates and their supporters, the state's lax campaign finance laws that allows unlimited donations, and while the voter ID law was tossed out, other states make it easier for voters to register and to cast their ballots. And we have three guests who have joined us. Jennifer Clark is here with us in our Philadelphia studio. She's the executive director of the Public Interest Law Center of Philadelphia. Jennifer Clark, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Also joining us by telephone is Barry Kaufman, executive director of Common Cause Pennsylvania. Barry, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Marty, it's a pleasure to join you again.
And we also have Shannon Royer joining us by telephone. He's Deputy Secretary for External Affairs and Elections at the Pennsylvania Department of State. And Shannon Royer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me on your show, Marty.
You're welcome. And Shannon Royer, let me begin with you and just put this to rest. So the debate over voter impersonation and a voter ID law is all done and taken care of in the state of Pennsylvania?
Well, the administration is not appealing, as you reported earlier, and for right now it is a non-issue as far as we're concerned.
And from your perspective, Jennifer Clark, someone that was, I guess, involved in this as the bill was sort of making its way through the courts, what's interesting is a Loyola Law School professor looked at something like a billion votes cast across the country, including federal elections and state and local elections. And out of a billion votes cast over the 14 years, he found 31 cases of voter impersonation.
Well, that's not surprising. That's exactly what our expert said. There's really no motive to impersonate someone else, and the consequences or the penalties are really high. So I think the judge did the right thing, and the state did the right thing by not agreeing to appeal.
Shannon, going back to you, so this, I guess, takes us back to the way things used to be. So when people go to vote in November and they go to their polls, what will they be asked in terms of ID?
Well, the only people that will be asked to show any kind of identification are first-time voters. That was a law that existed well before the voter ID law, which was Act 18 of 2012. So things pretty much go back to being the same. If you're a first-time voter or a first-time voter in a new precinct, you'll be asked to show some form of identification, which can be a photo ID. It could be a utility bill. It's a very broad list of IDs. So if you're voting for the first time, you'll still be asked to show some form of identification. The one aspect of the voter ID law that was upheld is the absentee ballot application. When you apply for an absentee ballot application, you have to put the last four digits of your Social Security number on the absentee ballot application as a mechanism to prevent fraud. So that aspect of Act 18 is upheld. So if you're voting by absentee ballot, you fill out your application, you'll notice that you're asked to put your last four digits of Social Security to help verify your identity.
Barry Kaufman, anything you want to say about Act 18?
Well, I know. I think it's important that they know this did happen. It was a law that ended up, would have probably violated the constitutional voting rights of, you know, somewhere between 90,000 and a million Pennsylvanians. But we do have to be cautious. There are rumblings that there will be those in the legislature that try to bring this back, so we just have to be on the alert.
Let me talk a bit about registration, and I'll go back to you, Jennifer Clark. In Pennsylvania, in order to register to vote, you have to do it 28 days before an election. You have to do it either in person or by mail. Is that onerous?
I wouldn't say it's onerous. What I would say is that because of human error, it just causes lots and lots of delay and problems for people to vote. So you think about it, you have to write something down. So then the people who run elections in the counties have to take that information and put it into the computer. That takes time, and it also is prone to error. So what we see is just before elections, thousands of registrations are dumped on our poor election commissioners. They have to get it in time to get it in the poll books. And that creates lots and lots of people who show up at the polls and can't vote because people can't find their name. And the easy solution is online voter registration.
And how would that work?
So online voter registration is something that 24 states do already. And essentially, instead of filling out a paper ballot that someone has to then code in, you vote online. You use the internet. And in fact, we're already doing that somewhat here in Pennsylvania. When you get a driver's license, the Department of Transportation can ask you, do you want to vote? And they will do that electronically.
What do you think about that idea, Shannon Royer?
Well, we're pleased that there's an online voter registration bill making its way through the General Assembly. It's advanced from the Senate over to the House. Senator Smucker from Lancaster County is the sponsor of the bill, and we're watching it closely, and we're again pleased that the General Assembly is tackling this issue. There's one aspect of his bill, though, that we're concerned about, and that's the fact that it appears to remove the signature requirement for when you register to vote online. And so right now, when someone goes into the polling place, there's a poll book there, your signature is there, because when you register to vote, you put your signature down on the application, and the poll workers compare signatures when you sign in on election day to the poll book signature that's in the record. This legislation appears to remove that signature requirement, which both federal and state law currently require. So we're pleased to see it moving. We'd like to see it amended to somehow fit back in the signature requirement for registration.
But do you agree with Jennifer, Shannon, that if there were online registration, that would, I guess, relieve the burden of all this hurry-up paperwork a month before an election?
Yeah, what it does is the information is filled out by the voter, transmitted to the county election office electronically. They verify the information. They do a check for Social Security, make sure the person's not registered somewhere else, and then enter them into the system. So it is a quicker process. It is a process that saves postage. It is a process that saves data entry. And, of course, when there's data entry, you get lots of mistakes, and a lot of county election offices hire temps during presidential election years, for example, and there is a avalanche of voter registrations that come in the months leading up to the fall election in a presidential year. So online voter registration takes care of all of that.
To you, Barry Kaufman, and you've been an observer of the legislature for some time now, do you see this bill making its way through the legislature and to a governor's signature?
We think there's still a good shot at doing that this session from the folks we've talked to. We are running out of time this session, but there are still quite a few legislative days left, and this bill is very close to passage, so it's possible. And as Shannon Royer said, you know, the beauty of this bill is that it's a four-way winner. It creates voter registration data that is more secure and more accurate. It provides increased efficiency at the state and the county level, makes it easier for voters to register to vote. You know, they can vote from their homes, from a library, from an office, right up to moments before the deadline closes. And from those who are interested in tax savings, in every other state, it has saved taxpayers considerable amounts of money. At the state and the county level, I think was in Arizona, the cost to process a voter registration went from 85 cents to 3 cents, and in Washington, I think it went from $1.55 to 45 cents. So it's a four-way winner.
To you, Jennifer Clark, and it looks like you want to say something. Go ahead. You have an advantage in that I can look at you. Go ahead.
Right. I think that what's so interesting about this is that you have both people in the administration and the advocates all saying the same thing. But what we don't see yet is action by the legislature. And I think the problem here is election administration is, it sounds like a really dull subject. So we don't have people out there on the streets calling for it, even though all of us want a modern election, a modern, convenient, sophisticated system of elections. So what we don't have is a call to action to our state legislature.
Coming from the people, you're
coming
saying.
Coming from the people. And there, let's hope that, that the legislature hears this before the end of the session. But we don't see a lot of pressure coming from the public.
Shannon, Jennifer, and I were talking about this before going on the air. Why do we have to have registration at all? And there is something called the Voter Registration Modernization Act, or some version of those words, where basically, if you're an American and you turn 18, you're automatically registered. When you become a citizen, you're automatically registered to vote. If you move from state to state or from town to town, that registration follows you. Would that work in Pennsylvania?
I think the concept behind voter registration, leaving it up to the states, is that you're verifying that people are casting their ballots legally. You're not registered in more than one place within a state. You're not registered in multiple states. This is a very transient society. People move around in state. They move into Pennsylvania. They move out of Pennsylvania. And when you have a registration system in place in each of the states, it gives people the opportunity to register legally. Those voters who can legally cast ballots can register to vote. It gives voter registration offices the ability to verify certain things, to make sure that the people registering, for example, are citizens, to make sure that they are of 18 years of age, for example. So without a registration system, I don't know how you would have any kind of confidence that the election results were determined by people who voted legally.
What do you say to that, Jennifer? And I'd like to get you in on this as well, Barry.
What I say is that even with a registration system, you still have to address all the questions that Shannon raises. You still have to make sure that people registered here aren't also registered in New Jersey. You still have to make sure that people who are registered are 18. So the fact that the registration system doesn't really solve those problems. So really what you have to do is look at what we already do. Mm-hmm. What we already do is the states now are sharing information about who is registered in one state or another. You have a system for, we know when people turn 18. We know that we have a selective service system. So we actually already have the tools to make sure that the people who are registered, however it is, either with a system or automatically, we already have the tools to determine that they are, in fact, the people who are eligible to vote.
Barry, how do you see this?
Yeah, there's a couple points here. I know I've seen some polling data that shows that most people in Pennsylvania already believe they have the ability and right to register online to vote.
Huh?
So now they're kind of surprised when they learn that they cannot already do that. I think portability is becoming very important. We live in a very mobile society, where people are, you know, moving from state to state, from county to county, town to town all the time. And they often don't even think about registering to vote till a few weeks or days before the election. And then quite often it's too late. So there is a move afoot across the nation. It's just getting hold now, is thinking about having permanent voter registration, which would be nationwide and would be, you know, triggered by when you get your Social Security number with your birth certificate. So it would automatically trigger when you're 18 and would be valid across the nation. We still have to work out many of the mechanics to make sure that it's verifiable. And so we're a few years away from that, but I think we will see that sometime in the near future.
Well, we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, talking with Barry Kaufman, Executive Director of Common Cause Pennsylvania, Shannon Royer, Deputy Secretary for External Affairs and Elections at the Pennsylvania Department of State, and Jennifer Clark, Executive Director of the Public Interest Law Center of Philadelphia, talking about how to improve elections in Pennsylvania. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Longs Park Amphitheater Foundation supports WHYY and presents the 36th Annual Longs Park Art and Craft Festival. This fine art and craft show will be held rain or shine Friday, August 29th through Sunday, August 31st in Lancaster's Longs Park. 200 fine artists and craftspeople will display an array of jewelry, apparel, paintings, ceramics, mixed media, and more. Wine, craft beer, artist demonstrations, and an art raffle are planned. Tickets and details online at longspark.org.
Hi, I'm Terry O'Reilly. Smokey Robinson's voice is a cornerstone of soul music, and his work in the business shaped Motown's considerable legacy. Smokey Robinson joins me for a feature conversation coming up on Cue the Summer from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. The sounds of the Polyphonic Spree are celestial rock meets choir.
From the very beginning, that's what this whole thing was to bring in symphonic instruments mixed with the rock instruments and create this sound.
Next time on Here Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, again talking with Shannon Royer, Barry Kaufman, and Jennifer Clark about ways to change or possibly improve the election process here in the state of Pennsylvania. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Jennifer, talk a bit about another idea that you reminded me of during the break, having to do with same-day registration.
So this is another innovation that other states have tried, and that is that if you show up at the polls, you want to vote, you're ready, you're eligible, but it turns out you're not registered, that those states will allow you to register right then and there. And that's something, again, that I would like to see in Pennsylvania. We got a lot of other lower-hanging fruit first, but that's something that it's a great idea, another way to get more people in there voting.
What do you think about that, Shannon?
Well, one of the concerns about that, obviously, would be making sure that the people that show up and ask to register on the spot, on election day, at a polling place, how do you verify that? How do you make sure that they haven't already voted somewhere else? How do you make sure that they aren't interested in voting multiple times on one day? It's the process that we have in place now, where basically the registration deadline is 30 days before each election, especially during federal election years, especially during presidential election years, gives county election officials the opportunity to carefully vet, make sure that people who are registering are legally able to do so. They check their citizenship, they check their Social Security numbers, they check to make sure they're not registered somewhere else. I don't know how you do all that on the spot at a polling place in one day. I'm not saying it can't be done. I think the technology now, especially where we are this day and age, I don't know that it exists, and I don't know that would engender any kind of confidence where people can register on the spot without whether or not knowing they voted somewhere else.
Barry, do we need to worry about people voting illegally?
I don't think so. I wanted to point out one thing that Mr. Royer forgot to mention. There are 13 states which already do have election day registration, some of them for many years, and it seems to work. Actually, some states have had it for over three decades, and it does seem to run pretty smoothly there. So it's a matter of us just upgrading our technology so that people can check registrations on the spot to make sure people aren't double registered. And again, here in our highly mobile society, it's something that people are coming to have an expectation of. And again, here's one of these advances that would save counties money because it dramatically reduces the need for provisional ballots. Now, I talked to several election directors. They're kind of a mixed feelings on this at this point in time. But they did say that if we maintain the 30-day cutoff period before an election, for the counties to get their books in shape and for the state to verify the books are in shape, they could, in fact, do same-day registration if they did have that 30-day period just to make sure everything was ready and accurate.
To you, Jennifer Clark, I mean, from someone who has looked at how voting happens in Pennsylvania, do you see the state behind the curve when it comes to some of these innovations?
I'm sorry to say that we are. We're talking about now online voter registration, but some of the other innovations that we see around the country, things like early voting, no-fault absentee balloting, there are 34 states, including states in the South, all in the West, 34 states have one or the other of those, so that we don't have this hysterical rush to vote during the whatever 12 hours that we have on a Tuesday. So that's another place where Pennsylvania is way behind.
And if you're talking about absentee ballots in Pennsylvania, you have to tell them why you're voting absentee, right?
Not only do you have to tell them why, but there are only a few reasons that you can give, and the reasons have to be that you're out of town on business or you're away at the military. So there are only a very few reasons, and a good one reason that you can't use is I have to work during those hours.
What do you think about that? I keep going back to you, Shannon, asking you basically the same question here, but does it make sense to at least take a look at some of these sort of no-fault, for instance, no-fault absentee ballots?
Absolutely. One thing about no-excuse absentee ballots, Marty, that's important to remember is, and I don't know if Pennsylvania is unique in this or if it's fairly common, but the circumstances under which someone can request an absentee ballot, they're actually laid out in the Pennsylvania Constitution. So to talk about changing to a no-excuse absentee ballot system, there's a school of thought in Pennsylvania from attorneys, lots of legal scholars, that it would actually take a change in our Constitution to do so. Not just legislation, but a change in the Constitution. So you have to have a House and the Senate pass identical language in two consecutive sessions over a three-year or four-year period to change the Constitution just to allow no-excuse absentee ballots in Pennsylvania. So it's not as easy as it sounds. I know some states may do it just by changing their legislation or changing their policies. In Pennsylvania, we have to do it by a constitutional change.
Barry, there's something like 27 states and the District of Columbia have no-excuse absentee ballots. Do you see the kind of hurdle that Shannon just referred to?
Yeah, I think Shannon's absolutely right there. The jury's sort of out on what approach you have to take constitutionally. Some people think that the constitutional language is inclusive. Some think it's exclusive. In other words, the debate is, does the Constitution say that the people mentioned in the Constitution who can vote absentee ballot, those are the only people who can, or does the Constitution say those are the people who must be given the opportunity, but others may be as well? So the jury's kind of out on that discussion.
We have a Facebook comment actually from Michael. He says, we need to redraw the lines on our voting districts so that races are competitive and there are fewer safe districts. We've done entire shows on this very topic. But Shannon, do you see redistricting or gerrymandering, as it's called? Do you see that as a problem in Pennsylvania?
Well, we went through, you may recall, an extraordinary process in Pennsylvania, first time in recent history that anyone can remember, where the Reapportionment Commission had the boundaries for state House and state Senate districts thrown out by the Supreme Court. So the Reapportionment Commission drew the lines. It was challenged in the courts. Supreme Court threw it out, and it became a multi-year process. The Department of State, we had to advertise. It cost us millions of dollars because we're required by the Constitution to advertise the boundaries. So every time the boundaries changed, we had to advertise the new boundaries for people to see. But it was a mess. But it's the process that we have in place. Many states do it differently. Some of them have commissions that operate differently and have different levels of citizen input. But Pennsylvania system does appear to be archaic.
Go ahead, Jennifer. Looks like you're chomping at the bit there.
So we were the lawyers who helped the clients challenge that first map, and it was based on the Pennsylvania Constitution, which says you can't split municipalities unless you have to. And that map did that. I think that as Shannon said, we initially won, and then they redrew it, and then it was deemed acceptable. I think the problem is that only gets to a little tiny piece of the problem. That is the Pennsylvania state legislative districts, but it doesn't get to Congress, and it doesn't get to some of those really crazy districts that we saw in that reapportionment. And that's a very, very hard. That's a hard nut to crack. The law is not favorable on challenges, even if it was a very partisan-looking kind of map. That's not really a basis to challenge it. So that's that is an issue that we are still looking at for some sort of legal redress. But right now, the law is not favorable on challenging those.
And that's Jennifer Clark, Executive Director of the Public Interest Law Center of Philadelphia, also joining us in this hour by phone, Barry Kaufman, Executive Director of Common Cause Pennsylvania, and also by phone, Shannon Royer, Deputy Secretary for External Affairs and Elections at the Pennsylvania Department of State. And we are talking about ways to improve or change how elections happen in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9444. 1-800-WHYY-WARP99. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Barry, let me go back to you with something that you wrote recently, that you want candidates in Pennsylvania to take what you call the People's Pledge. Can you spell that out for us?
Sure. If I may, just someone follow up on Jennifer's comments.
Sure.
Common Cause has been working for, well, since the early 1980s on reforming Pennsylvania's redistricting system, because not only do you have to have the right to vote, which was the topic of the discussion earlier, but once you get, once you go to the polls and do your vote, cast your vote has to be meaningful. So if redistricting predetermines as many as 85% of the outcomes of races in Pennsylvania, we really don't have meaningful races. And through redistricting, the primary becomes the real election
right.
in Pennsylvania.
Right, right.
So if you're not a member of the majority party, do you really have the right to vote if the primary determines the winner? So we do need to make major changes to make, that includes campaign finance reform as well, but to make the casting of vote a meaningful process as well.
And I want to pick up on all of those, but again, spell out this People's Pledge that you want the candidates to take.
Sure. In Massachusetts and Rhode Island and a few other states, they've taken a new innovation in response to Citizens United, and which is a Supreme Court case which now permits corporations and other special interest groups to invest millions and millions of dollars in support of campaigns, and which is clearly not in the public interest. So in Massachusetts, they did something pretty innovative, and they had one of the candidates reach out to the other candidate for U.S. Senate, and they've done the same thing in Rhode Island this year, where both candidates pledged to eschew outside expenditures on their behalf. So if one candidate would get outside expenditures on their behalf, they would have to give a certain amount of money, predetermined, from their hard money campaign funds to a charity of their opponent's choice. What this has done is really cut down on all the nasty ads we see on television and radio, made it a much cleaner campaign. It tends to be a more issue-based campaign instead of the kind of the cheap shot rhetoric we see so often see in our campaign. So it's really cleaned up the campaign and removed a lot of the special interest money.
And anyone in Pennsylvania taking you up on that campaign pledge, Barry Kaufman?
We have reached out pretty aggressively to both Governor Corbett and to Tom Wolf. So far, they've been stonewalling that effort here. Apparently, they see the importance of having access to those special interest outside campaigns on their behalf. We're still trying to turn them around because we think the voters should be of most importance to the candidates instead of their campaign donors.
And I do want to pick up on the money campaign issue, but first let me get Wayne from, looks like Pottstown, to join our conversation. Hi, Wayne, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, everybody. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm okay. I just want to say that I understand that they want to have people who voted, are going to be voting to be registered. They want to know if people are exactly who they claim to be. But my beef is, when I watch TV and I see the candidates on TV one after another, one guy says this guy moved his plane to Delaware. Next guy comes on, he says he didn't move his plane to Delaware. How are we supposed to decipher the truth and what's not the truth when it comes time for us to make a logical decision on who we want to place our vote with? I mean, if honesty is going to be in voter registration, I think it should go the other direction, that the candidates themselves should be honest. And if this is a blatant lie, when one person says that another person didn't move his plant, and then the other person comes on and says, well, I didn't move my plant, how are we supposed to make an informed decision when we're bombarded on TV, you know, sometimes one after another, with these commercials, and we have no way of deciding which is real and which is not?
I hear you. Yeah, no, I hear you, Wayne. I mean, one is turn off the TV, but that's a totally separate issue. But there have been calls, I'll toss this to you, Jennifer, then to you, Shannon, for truth squatting. I mean, having some organization, a nonpartisan organization that can truth squad these ads for people.
Yeah, I think that that's, there are wonderful groups out there, the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, that really are all about getting the candidates right in front of the people so that the candidates are face-to-face with people and really responding directly to these things. Is it true or is it not true?
To you, Shannon, I don't know if you weigh in on things like that, but I'd be curious about your response. And I think Wayne speaks for a lot of people very frustrated when you see where most of the campaign money goes, it ends up on TV.
Yeah, sure, I understand that. I mean, that's left for voters to research, and there are groups that carefully watch television spots and then issue reports on accuracy on both sides of the political spectrum, and they just have to take the time to research. So I will tell you that at the Department of State, one of the things that we did earlier this year for people looking for information about the candidates, we enhanced the online the ability for people to see online the campaign expense reports. We updated our campaign expense report site. It is much easier now to search candidates' expense reports. It's quicker. It's more intuitive. And we have a search criteria that was beefed up a little bit more like Google. So people now looking for information as to who is funding the campaigns, the different interest groups and individuals, you now can go to the Department of State's website, click on our campaign finance section, and be able to learn more about who's paying for the ads that you see on TV, who's contributing to the candidates, and how they're spending their money. So we're very happy about that because I think transparency is important.
Barry, let me get you back in on the conversation also about money. And in Pennsylvania, individuals can give unlimited amounts of money to the candidate of their choice. Do you think there should be limits?
Well, absolutely. Pennsylvania is one of only 11 states in the nation which doesn't have some kind of limit on the amount of money that that individuals may give to candidates. Unfortunately, the Citizens United decision kind of messed that system up a little bit. In Pennsylvania, where there's really no impact because there has been unlimited donations in Pennsylvania. But Citizens United basically now says corporations can unleash their very large war chests, their very large treasuries, into campaigns to do independent campaigns, which are not supposed to be coordinated with candidates. They still cannot, in Pennsylvania, give money directly to candidates. But that was kind of a game changer. So the first thing we need to do is limit the amount that can be given directly to candidates, because as the Supreme Court noted in Buckley versus Leo, four decades ago, is that there is, citizens can reasonably make the linkage that somebody giving a candidate or a public official large amounts of money could influence his or her judgment or even corrupt that person. So we need to get where other states got in the 1970s, and we do need to cap the amount that any one individual can give to a candidate for office.
Shannon, about 30 seconds before a break here, can you respond to what Barry just said?
Yeah, very, very unfortunate because of the Citizens United decision, as Barry mentioned. Independent expenditure groups in Pennsylvania now are allowed to register. They can't coordinate their activity with candidates, but they are allowed to accept contributions for the first time ever directly from corporations and directly from labor unions. Not corporate PACs or labor union PACs, but directly from corporations and directly from labor unions. So that's a direct result of Citizens United. Pennsylvania was sued, and now, unfortunately, we even have more money coming in from interest groups.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Shannon Royer, Barry Kaufman, and Jennifer Clark, and with you. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Wayne, thanks for calling. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, Alan Ayckbourn's Intimate Exchanges, starring Jennifer Childs and Anthony Lawton. A part of the 2014 Philadelphia Fringe Arts Festival, Intimate Exchanges features 8 possible outcomes and puts the audience in charge of the story. This award-winning comedy plays through September 21st at the Arcadia Stage at Arden Theater in Old City. Tickets and info at 1812productions.org.
Hi, my name is Jackie, and I am an addict.
On the next Fresh Air, Edie Falco, the star of the Showtime series Nurse Jackie. She was nominated for an Emmy this year. She won an Emmy in 2010 for Nurse Jackie and won 3 Emmys for her performance as Carmela Soprano in The Sopranos. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
General wants the cavalry to deal with ISIS.
We are not in a position where we want to commit boots on the ground to repel them, but there's going to have to be some force on the ground, in my judgment, to push them back out of these areas that they've taken over.
Former top commander in Afghanistan, General David Barno, on the military realities in Iraq and Syria. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and you're listening to another edition of Ballot Talks when we look at all things election-related, a regular part of our Thursday schedule. We're examining ways to improve the election process in Pennsylvania, the logistics of voting, the selection of candidates, and, of course, money and campaigns. Our guests are Jennifer Clark, Executive Director of the Public Interest Law Center of Philadelphia, Barry Kaufman, Executive Director of Common Cause Pennsylvania, and Shannon Royer, Deputy Secretary for External Affairs and Elections for the Department of State in Pennsylvania. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Jennifer, this is to you. John from Havertown says he thinks online registration, day of registration, is a bad idea because fraud, as he says, can creep in. Should we be concerned about that?
No, we shouldn't. You think about the registration process now. You fill out a piece of paper and you swear under oath that you are a citizen and that you are over 18. So the online voting process isn't different in that respect. You still have to swear under oath that you are a citizen and that you are 18. So that really there isn't any difference in, there's a difference in how you do it, but there's not any difference in that piece. And the swearing under oath is really important because it's a crime. Mm. It's a crime to say that you are a citizen if you're not. And that's a crime that really doesn't, it's a big crime. And for somebody who really isn't a citizen, there's really not much upside because if there's a close vote, then the candidate who loses is going to go look at every one of those votes. Now you've committed a crime and you haven't helped because your vote's going to get thrown out. So there really isn't, there's not a lot of motivation for people to do that. And it's not very different than what we've got now.
Barry, let me go back to you and third-party candidates in Pennsylvania and their supporters. Independent voters complain a lot about our closed primary system. And that, as you were saying, it's really the primary that determines elections in many ways. I mean, if you're not a Republican or Democrat, you don't get to participate. Is it time to open up our closed system?
Yes, Common Cause has supported that for quite some time. There is a group called the Ballot Access Coalition, which is a unique combination of libertarians, Greens, constitutionals, who have been pushing this for years as well. And I think there's also a relatively new organization called Independent Pennsylvania, which is pushing for this. So, and as I noted, because of our redistricting system in particular and some degree campaign financing systems, the real election does become the primary. Because if you win the primary in almost, I'd probably say at least 85% of the state, you're pretty much guaranteed to win the general election. So if you can't vote in the primary, you're not able to vote in the election that really counts.
Shannon, do we make it too hard for independent candidates and their supporters in Pennsylvania?
I don't think so. Open primaries, for example, I mean, that's a philosophical question, and if you talk to the parties, political parties, if you talk to Republicans and Democrats in the legislature, there's very little support for something like that. And I think if you talk to them, their concern might be things like, well, you know, in a low turnout primary, can some kind of plan B put afoot to influence opposition party's primary? Can Democrats vote in a Republican primary? Republicans vote in a Democratic primary? So there are concerns like that. It's really philosophical. Here at the Department of State, we work with all 67 counties to administer an election, and whatever the law says in terms of the primaries, we'll certainly make sure that it happens accordingly. But I think you have those objections from political people. We have only Republicans and Democrats in the House and the Senate. We have, you know, the political party is very influential, and I think they're just concerned probably about any kind of shenanigans that could take place in low turnout primaries.
Well, does Jennifer give the Republican and Democratic parties basically a lock on our election system here?
I thought it was very interesting that Mr. Royer talked about the interests of the elected officials, but really we should be thinking about the interest of the voters. Of course, the elected officials have an interest in maintaining the current two-party system exactly the way it is, and they don't have any interest in letting third parties in. But I would say from the point of view of a voter, voters may have an interest in a third party if they don't find someone that meets their needs in the existing parties.
Well, Barry, in fact, more and more people at least call themselves independents or don't call themselves either Republicans or Democrats.
Right. I mean, in some states, you don't even register by party. You just register to be a registered voter. And then you choose a party in most of those cases on a primary election day. And now California has gone even farther to sort of turn their primaries into a runoff where the two winners of the primary, regardless of party, end up going head-to-head in the general election. So California seems to be making the advances and tends to be leading the nation. So we ought to look at some of the things they're doing out there.
Let me get Ellen from Center City, Philadelphia. I think I know who this is. Is this Ellen Kaplan?
Yeah, hi. This is Ellen Kaplan. I'm the interim president and CEO of the Committee of 70. Good
yes,
morning.
Good morning here in Philadelphia. Yes, go ahead, Ellen.
Okay, I just had two comments. One had to do with online voter registration, which the Committee of 70 strongly supports. And let me just remind everybody that during the right before the November 2012 presidential race, the city of Philadelphia was backlogged 28,000 voter registration applications. Online voter registration would be a huge relief for the system, which now requires manual entry of data on a voter registration application. Other states have worked out security problems, and I'm confident that Pennsylvania can too. And there is a bill, obviously, that's pending in the General Assembly, and it would be terrific if it passed in time for the 2016 presidential election.
Well, Ellen, I appreciate the call into Radio Times. That's to you, Shannon, and she's talking about, first of all, manually entering all this information and a backlog of something like 28,000 forms. I mean, you know, these are individuals who are scrambling to get this information into the system. Sounds pretty onerous.
I mentioned that earlier in my comments. The process now is they have to hire, particularly during presidential elections, temps. So these county election offices are swamped with people interested in voting in a presidential election in the fall, and they have a 30-day cutoff. But as Ellen mentioned just a minute ago, in some of the larger areas, such as Philadelphia, they have a heck of a lot of voter registration applications to go through to make sure those people are on the books so that they can, in fact, register to vote in that particular election. One of the benefits to online voter registration is that data is entered by the voter, and it's transmitted electronically to the county election officials, who still must verify the identity of the voter and look at the Social Security number and do the HAVA background check, the Help America Vote Act background check that's required by law. But there's no data entry, so it results in a smoother system. So, yeah, I agree with Ellen's comments.
Jennifer, you've actually said several times to me off the air, and I want to share it on the air, which is, I mean, we are talking here about the nuts and bolts of voting and electing people. And, I mean, in certain ways, there's nothing more basic or maybe even more important than these nuts and bolts.
You know, when we were doing the photo ID lawsuit, the thing that came across, it was a bipartisan pride in this country, and the bipartisan pride was that we have the right to vote. So you have that on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you have these mechanics that make it really hard for people to vote. And this should be something that it's solvable. It's low-hanging fruit. All of these administrative barriers, it's not fun or sexy to think about. It's not like discrimination, or it's just how people do things. It's the bureaucracy, and it's fixable.
And it's fixable. Do you agree with that, Barry?
Oh, absolutely. I guess I would like to put in a plug, if I can, for your listeners, and that is get on the phone and get on the email and contact your legislators and tell them you want them to vote on Senate Bill 37. Our intelligence says that if this bill is brought to vote, it will pass, and it will pass with healthy margins. So it's just a matter of getting it called up for a vote. So that's the key message right now, I think.
Shannon, I know there's a whole history here, but and it's not just in Pennsylvania. Why do we vote the first Tuesday in November? You know, this is a workday. People are their children. I guess schools are probably closed, but nonetheless, it's a workday. It's a very inconvenient day to go to the polls. Do you think that depresses numbers?
I don't think so. I think, just to contradict a little bit some of the earlier comments, there are no real impediments to voter registration or voting. And if you want to register to vote in Pennsylvania, you have multiple opportunities. You can print a form online, print it off, and mail it in. You can, when you go to PennDOT, you are able to register to vote or change your registration. Human service agencies in Pennsylvania provide voter registration forms. So there are lots of registration opportunities. We have 8.2 million registered voters in Pennsylvania right now, and that fluctuates from week to week, that number. But there are a lot of people who are registered to vote and find the process relatively smooth. So I don't think we have a broken system at all. In fact, Pew did a study this year, and Pennsylvania ranks 16 out of the 50 states in election performance, including the ability to register to vote, wait times at the polling place, which is a national average in the 2012 presidential election. So 16 in the country, that's not bad at all. So I think we're doing things very well here in Pennsylvania.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
So what we see, I think what we're talking about now is on election day, what happens to people. And because we only have the polls open for a limited number of hours, what we have is, particularly in urban areas, we have long lines. And that's the problem. That's it. Not to take anything away from the work the Department of State has done, but if you don't have enough polling places and people are rushing to get there between a limited number of hours, you're going to have long lines. And people do have a problem. If you work and you can't stand in line, if you work during those hours, or you get there early and the machine is broken, or there's 20 people there, you can't wait. That's where the problem comes in. And that's why so many states, 34, have either early voting or no-fault absentee balloting, because it takes away the pressure of that one day, which is a relic of the 18th century in our agrarian culture, when you had to travel days and days to get to the polling place.
Barry, anything you want to add? Then we'll get back to our callers.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think for folks who are interested in election issues, they ought to take a look at the report of the Presidential Commission on Election Administration, which pointed out a lot of best practices around the country. And, you know, Pennsylvania can certainly make its elections even better than they are. I mean, there's a lot of small things we can do, such as have curbside balloting for elderly and disabled people. People who are 16-year-olds pre-register so that they're ready to vote when they're 18-year-olds. We could have accessibility audits by disability organizations to make sure that our polling places are in fact accessible to people with disabilities. So there's scores of reforms we could make, advances we could make to make the voting process more accurate and more user-friendly.
Let me see what Mike from Phoenixville has to say. Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I'm calling to say that I believe that the argument against voter ID is true, which is that there's no current evidence of any widespread voter fraud. Given that that is the case, that means our current system works. We know it works. So it is secure. That is why I'm against online voting and online voter registration. Why tamper with something we know works? Any technology can be hacked. Private Manning,
I don't want to get off on a tangent here. Let me take your essential question, Mike, which is that the system that we have is working. And Barry, if I can toss that first to you.
Sure. I mean, our election system actually performs pretty well on election day, but there are lots of things we can do to make it even easier. I mean, our society has changed dramatically since the time our election laws were passed in the 1930s and from the customs on which they're based. So, you know, people do have different lifestyles today, and we have to continuously adapt. We have to continuously renew our systems to make them function for the times in which we live.
I mean, Shannon, we do so many things online, including things like banking and shopping, where we're giving away, you know, I mean, we're hopefully that information is protected, but shouldn't that give us confidence that we can use the internet more for voting?
No, and I'm sorry, I have to not to contradict the comments earlier, but listen, online voter registration and online voting are two completely different breeds of cat. I mean, you have a system where if you're voting online, which is sounds great, but how can you guarantee that the secrecy of the ballots, which is embedded in our Constitution, the Pennsylvania Constitution, how can you guarantee that that's happening? And I think we have made tremendous strides over the last several years with security for online endeavors, for banking and whatnot. But look at just what happened last holiday season with Target, one of the largest companies in the world. During the holiday season, they were hacked. They had how much security measures in place, and they were hacked. Mm. And you know, hacking a corporation like Target is one thing, but hacking democracy is something completely different.
Shannon, I'm going to give Jennifer the last word. Go ahead, Jennifer Clark.
I find myself in the unusual situation of agreeing with everything that Mr. Royer said. Again, there is a big, big difference between online voter registration, where you're just sending in your information, and voting. In fact, we have been working for many years on the related problem of electronic voting machines, where you don't know whether your vote is getting cast as you intended.
Well, we could go on. My thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Jennifer Clark, thanks so much. I know, she just looked at her clock, and the hour flew by. She's the executive director of the Public Interest Law Center of Philadelphia. Barry Kaufman, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
And he's executive director of Common Cause Pennsylvania. And Shannon Royer, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Deputy Secretary for External Affairs and Elections at the Pennsylvania Department of State. And this is the Ballot Talks edition of Radio Times, devoting this hour on Thursdays to all things election related. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thanks for joining us. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.